Welcome back, Card Knock Life, episode 60-something.
Are we even counting anymore? Just Card Knock Life on whatever date this is?
We're
the
never
day
counting before. When we record, but we count when I type in the numbers on the website. So
Card Knock Life, the day before Valentine's Day?
Yeah, it's the day before Valentine's Day. That's right.
I'm
Corey.
I don't know how our girlfriends are going to let us do this. They probably just want to kill us right now.
My girlfriend is a wife. My ex-girlfriend, whom I'm now married.
That's fair.
But I won't see her all day tomorrow because I've got like pep bands and stuff all night. So we've
Infinite
postponed our
stuff. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, we did our things. We did our Valentine's Day yesterday and the day before. So.
Oh shit. Well, you know, this holiday. Don't get me started.
You don't like
this
it either.
Hallmark stuff. Yeah, I tell you.
I think we're in agreement. I just do it because she likes it. So.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's really my wife's thing, but she. We like going out to dinner, so we'll go out to dinner like on Wednesday or whatever. But
yeah,
we like the discounted candy at Walgreens.
Oh, dude, discounted candy is the best, dude.
I'm
going to go to every CVS in my vicinity and buy all of the discounted candy.
But we are strangely prepared for this episode. Lately, like I said, we've been really bogged down with work stuff, and I apologize for that. It's been a very crazy, busy time of year for us both, I think. But this time around, I got home early, and there's a lot of stuff I'm excited to talk about, so we're going to jump right in. But first of all, I want to kind of just get us caught up, because last week we left saying how, you know, Daryl, you were saying you kind of weren't super excited about modern, but it sounds like you got something you want to tell us about, you know, what you're doing in vintage and things like that.
Yeah.
So where are you at with Magic these days?
I haven't been playing a lot of modern. I'm going to go to the Team Star City event just to hang out with some people, play some Commander.
Yeah.
Chill. But I found out that on the East Coast there are just like a bazillion vintage events.
Right on.
And they're all proxy vintage events. And like, so they're like $40 entry fee. Winner gets a piece of power. Second gets a Library of Alexandria. Third and fourth get like bazaars. And then like store credit like 200, 150, you know, 100. And then like payout down to like top 16 or something like that. And there are like four of them coming up. And then there's the New York Stock Exchange vintage event, NYSE, in June, which is like a huge proxy vintage event that the top eight pay out a piece of power each. So like first place is a Black Lotus. Second is I think it's a Mock Sapphire or an Ancestral, like one of the blue spells, like Ancestral Time Walk. And so like, and then the Moxen all the way up and down, the Moxen Time Walk and Ancestral all the way up and down eighth place. And then like, 9th through 12th is Bazaar Baghdad and stuff like that. So those are really sweet events that go on the East Coast. And so recently I've just been playing a ton of vintage because I have power on Moto and just trying stuff out, trying to figure out where I want to go. And I've run into this like super fun deck that I enjoy playing. I know you kind of have a good grip on the deck from Modern, which is Blue Moon.
Oh, sure. There's a vintage version of that?
There is a vintage version of it. So a lot of your mana bases in vintage are artifact heavy. You know, you have all the Moxen, Lotus, Soul Ring, Mana Crypts, things like that. All the cheap, very banned cards in Legacy that most people don't play with. They maybe play with them in Commander.
Uh-huh.
And then a ton of non-basic lands. Talarian Academy, Dual Lands, Fetch Lands, Library of Alexandria, Bazaar of Baghdad, Forbidden Orchard to power Oath of Druids, various different things like that. So you can create a softness in that meta by exploiting two cards, Blood Moon and Null Rod.
Mm-hmm.
Null Rod turns off all the Moxen, Blood Moon turns off all the non-basics. And so, you know, you have to figure out how to keep yourself from kind of being stuck out in the cold on turn zero, which is you play blue and have Force of Will. So the deck kind of tries to avoid Chalice of the Void, which was restricted at one point, or was not restricted, now is. But it doesn't play very many one drops, it avoids Mental Misstep, and it doesn't play its own Mental Missteps. But it plays a ton of Islands, and you can play turn one Blood Moon, you can play turn one Null Rod. And then you just went off the back of various powerful Planeswalkers and card drawing spells. So the deck, the various like, non-controlling things the deck contains. It has three Dak Faden, which is very good in Vintage. Turns off people trying to tinker for Blightsteel Colossus. You can steal Mana Crypts or Soul Rings or Moxen if you need a mana boost on a turn. You can steal a Tide Vault or a voltaic key if you have a Sensei's Divining Top. Two Jace the Mind Sculptor, two Chandra Torture Defiance. I'm testing this card. I don't know if it's good. it's kind of turned out to be not so great because you do have a ton of counter spells. You have four Flusterstorm, four Mana Drain, four Force of Will, and two Red Elemental Blast. So because there's so many counter spells in your deck, it's turned out to be kind of awkward. So it might end up getting cut for some other Planeswalker or large.
Like, you don't want to flip a counter spell off the top of your deck with Chandra's plus one. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, you don't want to flip a counter spell off the top of your deck, but, like, when you put Chandra into play, even if you put it into play off of, like, a Lotus, the plus to make two mana pushes you towards your other endgame threats, Keranos and Consecrated Sphinx.
Okay.
So, like, it's kind of like six and one, half dozen the other. There are times, though, when you plus Chandra the turn after you play it, and you find a Blood Moon, and you just play it, and you're just like, well, my opponent can't do anything now, so.
Yeah.
But then you get a bunch of very good, so like you kind of are weak against Dredge with this deck because you don't get like Nihil Spellbomb or Rest in Peace or Leyline in the Void. It's like your graveyard removal because you need a ton of that against Dredge. You have Grafter's Cage, you have Tormod's Crypt. I play in a single mainboard Anger of the Gods and a couple sideboard Anger of the Gods. It doesn't really protect you from reanimate Dragonlord Kolaghan, make a bunch of zombies off of a Bridge from Below, and then just attack you with a bunch of hasty creatures. Doesn't really protect you from that angle, but it protects you from like Bloodghast and Bark Amoeba being in play and just chip shotting you and then sacrificing them for various other effects to get some zombies. So you can like anger their guys away, they don't get any zombies, and then they're kind of like stuck. But I'm kind of trying to figure out how to beat Dredge. Still haven't figured that part out yet. But you do have Energy Flux against artifacts. It gives all artifacts sacrifice unless you pay two. So it turns off all the Thorn of Amethyst effects and spheres. You have Shattering Spree and Vandal Blast and Rack and Ruin. And then for Monastery Mentor, you have Sudden Shock and Sulfur Elemental. And then just a bunch of Pyroblasts because you're playing in a mainly blue format. And so having Destroy Target Blue Permanent, Destroy Target Jace or Dak Faden, or Tezzeret, or Counter Target Ancestral Recall, or Addictor Time is pretty good.
Yeah, man. You know, at the least, it sounds like Vintage is pretty varied. There's a lot of, like, diversity in Vintage. And so, like, you know, with the restricted list, you play a lot of one-ofs, which makes for, you know, a lot of variety in your inclusions.
Yeah. And people think that Vintage is just like, oh, somebody drew more power, so that person wins. Well, kind of, sometimes. Sometimes your opponent, like... Sometimes your opponent just plays a turn one Jace off of, like, Black Lotus land.
Yeah.
And you're kind of behind the eight ball because you don't have a Power Blast to beat it. Or your deck just isn't built to beat a turn one Jace through, like, normal means. Yeah. And so you're like, oh, this is kind of tough. He's going to draw a bunch of cards as Jace. Maybe I can overcome the card advantage. Like, if they're light on Force of Will and Mental Misstep and Flusterstorm, you can maybe beat him if you're a combo deck or something like that. But then there's just also, you know, once all the power kind of gets smashed off of each other and people force little recalls and, you know, you get cards like Mana Drain coming out of left field, countering spells and giving you a ton of colorless mana so that you can play your big threats like Fact or Fiction or Consecrated Sphinx. Because oftentimes there are lines where, you know, your opponent will play a Jace and you Mana Drain it and you get four colorless mana. You can untap and play a Fact or Fiction and have all your mana up still. Or play a Consecrated Sphinx for two blue ones and then pass and draw a bunch of cards. Yeah, so, yeah. Like, that's kind of where this deck is, like, kind of gets its biggest boost is that it's playing four Mana Drain. So it's mostly a Mana Drain control deck that also tries to abuse the fact that you build your mana bases very weakly out of a ton of non-basics and a ton of artifacts.
Sure. Well, cool.
And so,
that sounds fun.
It's a great time. I'm going to probably start streaming it just to practice, like, Vintage in general and try and tune the numbers. So if people are interested in learning about Vintage or you want me to do some recordings for the website, I can do that too. And so we'll slowly start to induce people to the Vintage nonsense.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So you said, but it sounds like you were kind of high on Modern though. Like I wasn't a fan. I kind of turned to the older Eternal formats. You still really like Modern. You're a huge Delver player. You tried Tron for a while.
Yeah, I played. I played a league since we last spoke, and I went. It was a really bad league for me. I went like 2-3. I was playing Grixis Delver in that league, and I posted some pretty extreme exclamation on the Facebook page about Fatal Push, and And like that was a heated statement about that card being really shitty in Modern at the time. And that was after going, you know, losing three games in a row to a bunch of decks that played like almost no creatures and are running like, you know, just major like combo strategies. People are getting really experimental with Modern right now. Like the format's wide open.
Is it?
But it's kind of exciting because there's a lot of stuff that people are trying. It's not like super solved feeling like it has been in the past. And like the most, like if you look at the meta right now in like MTG top 8, like the top deck is like 8% of the meta. Like that's pretty healthy, I think. That's a pretty good balance. Yeah, I think that's great.
And that's Eldrazi Aggro. In Modern for a while, it was, you know, Twin and Pod, Affinity, all at like 15% meta share. And then you're just like, well, there's just random smattering of stuff that just doesn't matter because it can't ever beat Twin or Pod or Affinity.
Sure. And we're seeing a really good diversity of stuff. And the format slowed down quite a bit. The people were really excited about Fatal Push when that was first spoiled. That was when we had a lot of the Suicide Zoo and a lot of those like really aggressive creature decks, a lot of Infect in the format. And you know, the card would be great against those decks, but you're not seeing a lot of that right now. We're seeing a lot of creatures like Tassiger in like Prime Time, because there's a ton of red green like Valakut Breach online. I don't know why, in like, you know, Titan Shift, that kind of thing.
Well, I think people are playing
a lot of Grixis Control too.
I think a good estimation of why there's a lot of Titan Breach is that there are very narrow cards that interact with that deck. So the most popular now, one of the more popular removal spells is Fatal Push. Fatal Push doesn't interact with a Titan. You have to put in a little extra work to kill an obstinate Bail off of sideboard. So, and Fatal Push, as a consequence of the existence of Fatal Push, the concept of the meta tends to be one thing. It slows down. So what do you want to do when the meta slows down? You want to go faster.
Right.
And so I think that's why you see a lot of these Titan Breach decks that have a ton of consistency with four Summoner's Pact and four Primal Titan, and then can just hard cast it or cast through the Breach to put it in play and then make you absolutely miserable and accelerate their mana into the next Primal Titan or the next Summoner's Pact. And so I think that because the meta has – should have theoretically slowed down because of the bannings, the goal is to try and see if you can find a way to take advantage of people who are trying to slow down by going faster.
Sure, yeah. Well,
and so that's why I think Titan Breach is the thing.
Man, is that a stupid deck? I'll just say it.
Does it tilt you?
That deck.
Like, I'm not a huge fan of losing the lands. Like,
I hate losing the lands, but boy, you'll never catch me playing a deck that plays Farseek, you know, like a bunch of put a land into play and then
embarrassing cards.
But it's an interesting deck, whatever. It exists.
A deck like that is the argument. So I, you know, this is always one of the fun internal arguments of Modern is, you know, I think you and I both at some point said they need to ban Blood with Modern deck cards, not healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you want decks like this trampling all over Modern?
No, I think Blood Moon needs to exist. I think
if you're not going to provide something for the Delver strategies, which would be a Wasteland style card that effectively kills the non-basic and gives your opponent no upside like a Ghost Quarter does.
Right.
If you're not going to provide that effect, then you do have to provide something that end Moss beats non-basic lands, whether that's Blood Moon or Ruination, which, you know, Wizards has kind of openly stated, we don't like land destruction. So you're not going to get destroy all non-basic lands. That's probably not going to be a card.
Yeah. Yep. No, I don't think you are. Ruination.
A card of that quality that forces people to play fair.
You know, and I played against that deck a couple times in that league. I lost to it a couple times. Even despite what's the Eldrazi card that basically Molten Rains them and eradicates the land it hits?
Crumble to dust.
Yeah, Crumble to Dust, his Stomping Grounds. That should be like a kill, you know? Because when you hit his Stomping Grounds and he's already got like four mountains, basic mountains on the battlefield, that should be enough to take care of business, right? Because he doesn't really have enough to activate Valakut after that. But somehow I still managed to lose those games because he threw the breaches like a Prime Time and just beats me in the face and stuff.
Yeah.
The deck just happens to draw what it needs and kills me despite thinking to myself, like, yeah, I should be golden now. He's just going to top deck a bunch of Farseeks, right? Nope.
So, I mean, you got to think about the deck this way. It's probably playing like three to four Cinderglades.
Yeah, it's got a couple.
Four stomping grounds, sure. And like six to eight mountains. So it has, you know, somewhere in the range of 14 to 16 mountains. So if they have five in play, one of which is stomping ground, you extract all their stomping grounds. They still have eight mountains. So eight mountains when they have two Valakuts is more than enough to kill you.
Yeah.
So you have to, for that crumble to be effective, you have to kill Valakut with it. And so you just have to hope they have to roll one into play early, because that's just how their strategy ended up.
Sure.
Oftentimes that's not the case.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't want to go here. That's not my point. I'm not trying to hate on this deck. The deck exists. I'm just saying personally, from a pilot standpoint, I don't find it interesting. I don't think the deck is overpowered. I don't think it is, I don't think it's underpowered. I think it's a fine deck in Modern. I think that if you're prepared for it, you can combat the strategy just fine. And I think it's healthy. It's good. It's cool.
All that is fair. So. Yeah. The point is this.
Modern's interesting right now. There's a lot of cool stuff being tried. I'm happy to see that the banning was actually a legitimately beneficial thing for the format. I'm happy to see that it's wide open now, and I know that it's going to stay wide open for at least quite a while, because we don't have a looming Modern Pro Tour to come and really kick this thing into position. If we have a Pro Tour coming up, say in April, for example, a Modern Pro Tour with a metagame that looks like it does right now, all it takes is for three out of the top eight decks to be the same deck, and all of a sudden we've got a quote unquote solved metagame, and that's gonna swing this metagame heavily in favor of those three decks.
We're back to talking about bannings again.
No matter how strong those decks actually are, people are going to follow suit, right? So we're in a good position. We're in a good position right now, and I like that. So it's cool. Now, I stumbled across a couple of decks that I think I'd like to highlight, and mostly decks that have some of the new cards in them.
Okay.
So let me – actually, there's mostly just one I want to talk about here, but – but I've been trying to do the Eldritch Evolution thing for a while, and I talked about how I wasn't really having success with that.
That's not the one I thought you were going to say. I was hoping you were going to say that.
No, well, if you got another one, chime in with that after this.
I thought you were going to ask about breakfast cereal and Cheerios, but that's probably not your style.
No. Fair enough. That one is not my style, but I know what you're talking about. I talked about the Abzan Evolution. I was trying the Abzan Evolution. I played that at a PTQ a while back. I did pretty well with it, and I put it online, and it just wasn't fast enough. It couldn't compete with the really, really hyper-aggressive decks. Now, I think it's got a better shot now. That same exact 75 has a better shot without, Suicide Zoo and, in fact, winning on turn three. Because you've got more time to stabilize. What did you say? Can I post that, or did I post that?
Yeah, could you post that, or if you still have an old copy?
I've got the list somewhere. I've got the old copy, but I'll post this new copy because I think this is even better. We've got Renegade Rallier around, and this guy is nuts. This guy's great. So could you imagine this? All right, turn one, Noble Hierarch, right? Turn two, you play, now arguably the best two drop to evolve here is Voice of Resurgence. And let me just remind you what this does. This guy puts out a token that has power and toughness equal to the number of creatures you control when he dies.
Oh my God.
Turn three, you evolve a Voice of Resurgence into a Renegade Rallier, triggers the revolt, puts the voice back into play. You get a token, you get a voice back, and you get a Renegade Rallier. You've got a Noble Hierarch on the battlefield. That's a shit ton of power on turn three. You are just drowning them in value.
I'm a fan.
Now, not to mention, you've got the option of, saying, well, what deck am I playing against? Do I want to go value here? Because I also have choices. If I want to, I can instead maybe search out an Orzhov Pontiff and kill a bunch of tokens that they've got out there. I can slow down an Infect deck. I can kill a bunch of their Hierarchs and a bunch of their Glistener Elves. Or I can grab a Sin Collector and take care of a combo strategy across the table. You've got choices there. So this new Abzan Evolution deck has placed twice in, what is it? It looks like there was a regionals placement, and then it also, someone played almost the same exact deck in leagues. And they're only running three Eldritch Evolutions, and zero copies of Court of Calling, and zero copies of Collected Company, which is kind of interesting.
This, so it's that basically does just not a straight seem up value. Anywhere near correct. That just seems so wrong.
Well, but, I mean, it seems just fine to me. It's kind of like a little kid junk. type of version of it. And you know what else it's missing? Take a look at this, Daryl. Do you have the link here?
I don't.
Let me put this in the show notes. I'll put it in the show notes too, but let me put it in the chat so you can see it. How do I do that? I'll read off the list, and then maybe you can play along at home a little bit here. Two Birds of Paradise, four Noble Hierarch, one Casali Pride Mage, one Scavenging Ooze, four Voice of Resurgence, two Wall of Omens, one Anafenza of the Foremost, one Eternal Witness, one Orzhov Pontiff, two Renegade Rallier, one Sin Collector, one Linvala Keeper of Silence, that's the four mana Linvala, three Siege Rhino, one Sigarda Host of Herons, that's the Hexproof Sigarda, one Thrag Tusk, four Path, two Collective Brutality, three Eldritch Evolution, two Lingering Souls, a bunch of lands including two Gavany Township, and there's a Stirring Wildwood in there, and a Horizon Canopy as well, and then sideboard. What are we missing here? What's a creature that would typically be included in a list like this? Cost three mana. Kitchen Finks, right? Isn't that insane? So, I mean,
I thought I was crazy when I was looking at this list the first time when I saw no Kitchen Finks.
So it doesn't have the combo. I mean, obviously it doesn't have the combo, and it doesn't just want to, like, go that route of value. This is just, like, straight up, like, let's go on the beatdown plan, but it seems like, you know, why not just run a Kitchen Fang so you can, like, search into, or, you know, like,
right. But, like, if I'm like, on the beat, if I'm on the beatdown plan, where are my Tarmogoyfs?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, Tarmogoyf doesn't sacrifice.
You know, not even Tarmogoyf. Where are my Grim Flayers?
Yeah, Grim Flayer would be cool.
How do I fit my Grim Flayers in this deck? Because you're certainly going to have land creature, and then you have some instants and some sorceries. Like, you're telling me you can't get a Grim Flayer in this deck. You can't play a Tidal Scullery board so it dies. Or a Courser of Crucifix, and have some like artifact and enchantments that end up in your graveyard and like push you towards, or you could just play like one of the artifact creatures that cycles, and cycle an Architect's of Will get an artifact creature in your graveyard, you know, stuff like that.
Right. So,
but like,
so notably, no Kitchen Finks. Maybe there's a good reason for that. Apparently, he's just heavy on three drops, you know? Like, I guess he's opting more for, like, utility. He's got a lot of his sideboard type of inclusions in the main deck, like the Sin Collectors there. You know, like, with Renegade Rallier, that's a three drop. That's a 3/2. You know, like, maybe there's just not room when you run Renegade Rallier. I get that.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
But what he does have in the sideboard, another three drop, Fulminator Mage. Think about this one. How does Fulminator Mage interact with Renegade Rallier?
Badly? I mean, it triggers Revolt, but it doesn't come back.
Oh, it doesn't, does it? Oh, shit.
No. Yeah, that's why I'm like, I don't really like this deck.
Oh, okay.
With the Renegade Ralliers, because, like, none of your stuff comes back but Voice and Scavenging Ooze.
Okay, you know what he needs is that he needs a Revelark on the top of this curve. I'd play that instead of the Thrag.
Ooh.
He needs a Revelark and maybe, like, a Lone Missionary or something.
Revelark, unfortunately, doesn't get back. I mean, it gets back, like, your Eternal Witness. Your Orzhov Pontiff. But it doesn't get back, like, your bigger threats.
It gets
like
Voice.
Right, but it doesn't get back your Siege Rhino threats, which are kind of like your big top end. Like, having, like, Revelark by itself is just kind of a pretty vanilla 4/3.
Yeah.
When it's not getting back insane value, like Kitchen Finks and Eternal Witness.
That's true.
That's kind of the problem there. Like, I wish that you could end up with some sort of, like, aggro deck with this that's, like, Renegade Ralliers and Tarmogoyfs and Fleecemane Lions and like Ooze and Voice and Quasali Pride Mage. And so just like, you just constantly apply this pressure and like at the drop of a fetch land, you slam a Renegade Rallier, come back to Tarmogoyf and say go. And your opponent's just like, well, that's like 9,000 power that I have to beat now.
Yeah. 9,000 power.
Yeah, it's over 9,000. But like various different styles of like powerful like Thalia would be a really good fit in a deck like this with Voice or with a Renegade Rallier. I don't know, I couldn't remember that in the car. Because like against your combo strategies, they kill your Thalia and you're like, all right, fetch land, break, Renegade Rallier, get back Thalia, go. And so you just always have them on the mana back foot, things like that. Yeah, and so like I think there's an aggressive deck or like a mid-range aggressive deck. I don't know what you would call that kind of deck to be made there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know the configuration. But there are plenty of really solid cards that you could slot in. You know, between Ty Holoscholar and Thalia to interact with Combo and Aethersworn Canonist, Quasali Pride Mage to interact with Artifacts and Enchantments, Ooze and Voice of Resurgence as value, Goyf and Fleece Mane Lion or Goyf and Grimflayer as beatdown creatures. You know, you can play like a junk shell with, you know, Inquisition and Thoughtseize and whatever enchantments or whatever other card types you'd like so that you can trigger Grimflayer if that's the direction you want to go. I think there's a lot of good strategies that you can put around Renegade Rallyer. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of space that hasn't been explored, but I think the card is very good.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, one last thought on Renegade Rallyer, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here.
Sure.
I only meant for this to be a quick little thing, but we're passionate about Magic. We're going to talk a lot about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Renegade Rallyer seems to be an untapped resource in Standard as well, and it's one of the things we've kind of forgotten about with this really long Standard rotation that, you know, we haven't visited in a while is we've still got Battle for Zendikar in Standard through, what, December, right? We've got Battle for quite a while. Eldrazi Displacer interacts pretty well with Renegade Rallyer. Three mana blink a Renegade Rallyer. And does he trigger himself?
No, because he doesn't exile. He doesn't. It's not leaves play. It goes to the graveyard.
If a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn, return.
Oh my god! I definitely
control.
Thought it was went to the graveyard. That would definitely work.
So
oh
at the very least, if you've got an Evolving Wild sitting in your graveyard, you can three mana ramp with that guy.
Wow.
And Evolving Wilds can even grab a Waste if you're into that kind of thing, you know, to activate your...
I definitely misread this card and thought the card had to go to the graveyard.
No. So that's perfect, isn't it? So this seems to be like in the making for like a really awesome ramp deck. Could you imagine like... Now maybe this is just like too pie in the sky here, but like take this to the extreme, okay? Renegade Rallyer... with this like this ramp like Waste or not even Waste but like Evolving Wild engine, and we're gonna get like Emiria. What's the 7-mana angel?
Emiria Shepherd.
Okay, we're gonna ramp up to an Emiria Shepherd this way, right? And we're gonna control the board somehow in the meantime. Yeah. I don't know how. We'll deal with that part later. And we're gonna put. You know, we're gonna ramp up to Emiria Shepherd, and then we're gonna get that Evolving Wilds in play and start to blink back even bigger things with the planes that we're gonna start to search for with that guy.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's like the Sun Titan, like, you know, like Solar you could, Flare type of.
So you could do something like this in Modern if you just wanted to play green white Emiria or green white, you could light splash another color with Planeswalkers. So you could use Sakura Tribuilder. Four Sakura Tribuilder and four Renegade Rallyer as your sources of a ramp.
Yeah.
And maybe like toss in a couple Farseek if you're into that sort of thing. And then, you know, you have 8 or 9 fetch lands to go with your Renegade Rallyer. Break your fetch, play your Renegade Rallyer, get back your fetch, break your fetch. And, you know, so you've gone from 3 to 4. You know, Sakura Tribuilder takes you from 2 to 4. You go from 3 to 5 with Renegade Rallyer. You can play things like Gideon or Wrath of God or if you splash Black Ob Nyxalis or any Nissa Vital Force. And you can slowly start to claw your way up the chain to things like Sorin, Grim Nemesis, Emiria Shepherd, Ugin, Primeval Titan.
Selfless Spirit would be a great inclusion in that kind of deck.
Yes.
Your creatures are like permanently indestructible. You can play a Fumigate in there.
Yeah.
With no downside, you know, you can fumigate and you know, your creatures are indestructible. Hey, why not turn this into a human strategy? There are lots of great comes into play abilities on really
Thalia's
cheap
Lieutenant.
Humans. Thalia's Lieutenant, Thraben Inspector. And that's like a 1-2-3 curve. It's perfect with Rallyer. I'd say you drop a Thalia's Lieutenant, you block, you chump block, and then like turn 3. Or maybe even just like attack in with something, you know.
Yeah.
And then turn 3, you drop a Renegade Rallyer, and you get that back into play. Now I'm wondering how easy it is to trigger that Revolt in Standard. You know, like it's much easier to do in Modern where you've got fetch lands.
I think it's got to be kind of tough, right? Like,
yeah,
there's Evolving Wilds. I mean, the easiest way I can think of to trigger Revolt in Standard is Clues.
Clues, but then it's a 5-mana card. You know, So Clues are great. So then that like says Tireless Tracker is great and Thraben Inspector are great. Those are both humans, by the way.
Yeah.
That's 5-mana. That's pretty steep. And that's another 3-drop on Tireless Tracker. It's pretty steep
as
well.
Right. I mean, but clues are a way to guarantee your Renegade Rallyer provides you value.
Uh-huh.
Along the way, you know, when you're attacking with your various knuckleheads, your opponents are going to try and kill them.
Yeah.
And so your opponent kills one of your knuckleheads in combat, and then you're like, all right, Renegade Rallyer, get my knucklehead back. Let's do this. Because, like, there are times where your opponent might just, like, you attack and your opponent grasps with darkness as your Thalia's lieutenant. You play a Renegade Rallyer, Thalia's lieutenant, you know, Gavinny Township your team, and then have a Thalia's lieutenant ready to start growing as you play more cards.
Yeah, I can think of a lot. You know, I can think of a lot of great... a lot of great reasons that.
Yeah, you're not playing against air, which is the thing we have to remember here. If we were just playing against air, yeah, I would agree. Your revolt's pretty tough to trigger. You know, we're talking about a 5-mana card. But, you know, when your opponents are trying to kill your stuff, that or you're, like, doing combat, that makes it much simpler to trigger revolt.
Well, let me come back with this because I think I've got a pretty good. A pretty good basis for this in a green white human deck that I've already, you know, been piloting in standard. But my only concern with this is this whole engine here, Renegade Rallyer and Eldrazi
Displacer.
They're all 3-drops, and this is going into a deck that's already really heavy on the 3-drop slot. So
yep.
I have to take some reconfiguring. But let me see what I can come up with because I'm thinking of a deck that already runs Thalia's Lieutenant, already runs Tireless Trackers. And it already runs Heron's Grace Champion. You know what that does?
I know.
Heron's Grace Champion enters the battlefield. Other humans you control get +1/+1 and gain lifelink until end of turn. It's a 4-mana flash human. Flash lifelink 3/3. Can you imagine Eldrazi Displacer in that guy?
That'd be pretty good.
It'd be pretty great. 3-mana anthem lifelink until end of turn.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I don't know if that's good or not. I think that turns your deck into a 3-color deck, which makes it a little more challenging. It ups your curve.
So yeah.
There's some difficulties with that.
Just things to think.
But, all right. Anyways, we got other stuff to go on to, so we're gonna shift gears a little bit here, but there's a little food for thought for you.
Sure.
At the least, maybe share some ideas with us. I'm thinking Frontier would be a great place to brew with this, with where we have, you know, fetch lands.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anyways, here we go. So let's talk about something that actually came out about 4 days ago. I think this was posted on February 9th, it says. So the return of Nationals and changes to the Grand Prix. I want to just summarize this article real quick, purely facts here. And then I want to just ask your opinion, Daryl, about this whole thing.
Sure.
Ellen Bergeau posted this article on the Mothership about a couple of like changes to like major tournaments that you know are going to be taking place like almost immediately. A lot of these, some of them after the current tournament cycle is up. So there are 4 points that she made in this, and the first one is Nationals is returning. So the World Magic Cup is basically like the largest and like most significant tournament that Wizards of the Coast supports. And that is clearly, you know, like the world stage, right? So the World Magic Cup teams will be determined as follows. This is the new way that they're going to determine these. The top pro point earner, for each season will remain the team captain of a 3-person team. And the 2 other slots will be the top 2 finishers at Nationals, which will be the returning tournament structure that we used to have in the past. Now, the problem was this. Nationals was canceled originally because there was a lack of, you know, like legitimate tournament organizers in a lot of, you know, like some of the countries other than those countries with really large Magic communities in them already.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the World Magic Cups that we've run in the past and a lot of the, you know, developments of the game recently, they feel like they've got what they say is a robust network of organizers and can bring this structure back. So it sounds like what we're going to be going back to is we're going to have these schedule of tournaments over the course of a year where we have 2 major nationals tournaments, where we're going to determine those other 2 team slots. Now, there used to be a 4th team slot, 1 player on the team that was like that kind of served as like a coach for the team, which I wasn't even aware of in the last tournament because that player didn't even play in the event. Apparently that was kind of awkward for the team. So they're just like completely doing away with that entirely. So there are going to be 3 players on the team again. One is just like straight up the top point earner, excuse me. And then the other 2 are going to be the Nationals earners.
Sure.
Okay. And I maybe, am I correct on that? There are two events, or maybe it's just one event in the top two?
Let's see. So originally, I think just one event. Let me take a look. Let me take a look here and read the details.
National tournaments will be held all around the world on one of the following weekends, September 9th, 16th, or 23rd. So I don't know if they're saying that there's more than one or it's yet to be scheduled.
Those are the three dates that your host country could schedule on, and you get one.
Okay, so top two finishers. I see what it is. So it's first and second place at nationals. Got it. Okay. So I apologize for that. So top two finishers. Okay. So then the other thing in this article, the other fact two, shifting focus back to standard. So the World Magic Cup, the last one that we saw was Team Unified Modern. So because what was cited as Modern being not accessible readily to all countries, they're going to be switching the format of Worlds and now Nationals, as they're bringing the Nationals back, to Standard. They're going to keep the sealed portion of the event, but they're going to switch back to Standard and just do away with Modern entirely, which is not surprising. And that's always been a thing that they've said, is a lot of the smaller countries have limited access to Modern cards. Like, some of the older sets are harder for them to come by.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then number three, the return of Sunday PTQ at the GPs. So at Grand Prix, on Sundays, you could do a Pro Tour qualifier. And this is different than like doing a PPTQ, having to win a PPTQ and going to like a regional Pro Tour qualifier. This is just straight up like a one shot. You do a tournament, maximum capacity of 225 people. You play in the event, you win the event, you go to the Pro Tour. That simple. Okay, they're bringing these back. Cool, right? And then number four, the end of the in-store Grand Prix trials. So Grand Prix trials were events that you could play in a store to get buys at a Grand Prix. They're no longer doing them. So Grand Prix trials that are associated with Grand Prix Vegas, which is the next coming Grand Prix here, will be the last. And the reason they're going to do away with these is, this is really vague here, she said, mixed success and limited turnout. All right, so maybe that means that they didn't have many people show up to some, and some people could just come with a, you know, mediocre deck and say, well, there are 15 people here. I'm just going to spike this event and get some buys.
Hey, yeah, that's actually legitimately what happened.
Okay.
There are reports of people, like, I literally played in GPT that had 8 people in it.
So for better or for worse, that's the case.
Yeah.
I think the whole idea of, like, you know, giving people opportunities to play, like, another tournament to, you know, get buys at a larger tournament, like, I have mixed feelings about that. But
you're not a big fan of the satellite function?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of like, well, if you have an opportunity, like, on this given day, you know, you might luck out twice, right? You might luck out twice. You might be free on Saturday the 12th and Sunday the 19th, right? But you might just be ready, or you might just be available on Sunday the 19th. And if you are, then you've got to play an extra hour and a half of Magic. And if that's the case, you might be mentally drained from an hour and a half against, like, playing eggs, you know? Maybe not.
Sure.
Whatever. But that might put you at a huge disadvantage just because you happen to have to work on, you know, one particular day. I don't know. Sure. Whatever. It hasn't ever been a factor for me, but I'm sure that there are some players that have strong opinions one way or the other.
I'm going to kind of run down all my opinions on these.
Go ahead. So fire away. Now, those Nationals, are the facts.
Nationals is really sweet. I played in it before. It's really fun. I was really bad. I was really young. So cool that that's coming back. Sad face that everything's kind of shifting back to Standard as being the most important thing. You know, as you and I, as more Eternal type players, Modern, and myself, Legacy and Vintage, you know, we don't particularly enjoy playing Standard. We do it because it's there. Not a huge fan.
Yeah.
The return of the Sunday PTQ is awesome. PTQs are sweet. I've top aided quite a few. They're fun. They're super stressful. I've lost the finals of PTQ before. It's super stressful. But they're super cool. And so the fact that they're back is awesome. I wish that we would kind of turn away from the PTQ model and just go back to this model, because they're freaking awesome. And you can just hold them everywhere, but it is a cap on how many people go to the Pro Tour. So I understand why the PPTQ model is good for the game. In-store GP trials, I have no care about those. Like, I've played in 8-person GPT trials. I know. please just stop earning more.
Well, they are stopping, so there you go.
So I'm totally cool with 3 and 4. I'm not a big fan of 2. 1 is great. Like, you know, that's all I got on that.
All right, so as Magic players do, as soon as they announced the shifting focus back to standard portion of this announcement, everyone was like, oh my god, this guy is falling. Should I sell all my modern cards? Because they're no longer supporting modern in the World Magic Cup. It's leaving its place in the limelight. It's no longer supported. Oh my god. I'm pooping my pants. But fear not. It's going to be okay. Yeah, standard has always been the major moneymaker for Wizards. Okay, it's what's currently in print, right?
Yep.
Wizards doesn't make money off of sets that are not in print.
Facts.
So why would they go and push a format where the primary benefactors are the secondary market, right? They really have no incentive to do that. So it makes total sense for them to push standard. And then beyond that, it's much more interesting to see the pros and the top players of each country competing in a format that's going to be fresh every time it gets played, or hopefully is going to be fresh every time it gets played, because it's rotating constantly.
Yep.
Now, we've seen Modern time and time again get played, and then we see Affinity, Infect, Jund, you know, the same old decks, and it would happen again if we had another World Magic Cup with Modern Team Unified.
Absolutely.
So it'd be no surprise. I have no problems with this.
100% agree with you.
Okay.
It's also just better for new players. Like,
yeah.
It's easier for new players to watch Standard and be able to get into Standard than to watch Modern and be like, Tarmogoyf, how much?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's so negative for Pro Tour events to be so inaccessible. Like, Pro Tour level play to be so inaccessible for others outside of people who've been playing for a long time or have a lot of money to be able to participate in the things that they're seeing at the highest levels.
And you can make the argument Standard is expensive, and it is expensive. It's expensive. Modern is expensive, too. Modern is very expensive. In fact, you probably pay twice, if not three times, the cost for a deck in Modern. You can make the argument that the value is retained much longer. New players don't get that. They don't understand that. But the difference also is that when the cards are in print, you open those cards in packs. You know, a 14-year-old Magic player doesn't go and randomly pull a Snapcaster out of a pack. They don't have the opportunity to just stumble upon a collection to build a standard deck, or even a deck that they could, you know, like scrap together and go play at an FNM, you know?
Yeah.
So Standard is what they play. All right. So we're going to push that, because Magic is all about seeing the pros play and thinking to yourself, I can do that. I want to do that, and striving for that. And that's what gives a lot of the players the drive to stick with the game for so long. Everyone wants to be able to do that. And every bit of limited success that they enjoy at an FNM gets them one step closer to, you know, being able to do that. And that's what keeps people coming back to this. So that's a good way to do it. So, yes, makes total sense to me. Now, the next thing that I want to talk about here, and Daryl, you got anything else to add on this one before we move on?
No.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The next thing I want to talk about here, there's another thing that came out today, and this is a pretty good transition from that exact topic here, because Wizards is making a lot of changes to a much more casual scene now. We're coming from, like, the world stage here to, like, LGS that are really specific to new players, and they're really, really targeting new players with these changes. But there's an article that came out today now that said something about making Magic accessible for new players. That was the header. But there's a quote in bold in the middle here, and that kind of summarizes the idea. This is Helene Chase's article here. It says, 2017 is going to be a year of trying new things for our in-store play, a year of innovating, of experimenting, and of pushing the envelope for in-store offerings. Okay, so that's exciting already, right? We saw a lot of new stuff tried with our in-store play, like a lot of kind of unique events other than, like, you know, your typical FNMs and things like that. And we've always done game day as a way to make Magic more accessible to players. It used to be a free event, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was a free event. Now it costs like, you know, at a lot of game stores, it's like maybe $5 or $6 to play. There's really limited prize support, but Wizards, you know, supports it by, you know, doing the promos and the playmats and things, and they really throw a lot of stuff at you. It's not nearly as good as like a, you know, standard win a box, and it's certainly designed so that it doesn't bring out all the spiky players. But the idea is that it brings out a lot of players who typically wouldn't be going to, like, you know, a Star City Games Open. You know, it brings out the 14-year-old players that are just getting into Magic the Gathering, or, you know, like the players who don't have time to, you know, like, scrap to build black-green Constrictor.
Delirium, yeah.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be casual, it's supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be lighthearted. It's not really that way anymore, is it?
No.
I hear so many really competitive players bragging about, I top-8ed my local game day with this deck, and saying that as if it's a major accomplishment, you know, rolling out their play mats and things. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that's something designed for new players. You're supposed to go there and bring a brew. You know, you're supposed to go and have fun. So I went to the game day on Saturday, kind of on a whim. A friend of mine who plays standard primarily and a little bit of modern with me gave me a call and he said, hey, are you going to the game day? And I was like, yeah, I don't have a standard deck, so probably not. But about an hour and a half before the event, I was like, are you going? Like, do you have a bunch of cards? Like, I'm going to try to, like, scrap something together. So I, like, hadn't played Paper Magic for probably about 4 months. So, like, I had only Battle for Zendikar cards. So I put together, like, an Eldrazi deck, and, like, I was hoping I could buy some Aether Hubs when I got there, and maybe even some Harness Lightnings when I got there, and they, like, had none in stock. So I was running, like, one Harness Lightning and, like, 3 Aether Hubs, and, like, my deck was pretty piecemeal. But it was still very fun to do. But my first round opponent, I sat down with him. I was trying to engage him in conversation, and he, like, rolls out his playmat, and I said, so how long have you been playing here? He's like, I come just about every week, and, like, I play a lot. And that was, like, all he said to me.
Wow, really?
I was like talking to him about Magic and stuff. I was like trying to be nice to him, and he just did not want to talk to me. And he was playing a control deck. He was playing Esper Control. And man, it was not enjoyable. And I was thinking to myself, this is the exact opposite of the type of interaction that you're supposed to have at these things. You know, it's like, this is not what we're trying to achieve here. My second round opponent was a fourth grader. Because I lost to the first round guy.
Please tell me you lost to the fourth grader.
No, I beat the fourth grader, but it was a good match. I let him deal 10 damage to me, double strike in one hit, and he got pretty excited about that. We had a good time. We talked about energy. but it made me think, you know, how do you reach those players that want to do those things? Because the things that were set in place for those exact situations no longer really exist. They've been kind of taken over. They've been shifted. You know, when they put the prize support too high, when they offer too great of things, or when they offer prizes that are too enticing to the spikier players, they get those spiky players to come out and kind of take over those events. So going back to this article, there are a couple of things that have been put in place this year that really seem geared towards those players. And so for the spiky players, they might not be so interested in this. But for someone like myself who keeps thinking, how am I going to get my high school brother to come out to a Magic the Gathering event? You know, he doesn't really have the attention span or, like, the card base to play a really competitive event. And I think that FNM just might be too competitive for him to even sit down and enjoy himself, because he's just going to get his butt kicked by someone playing copycat, you know?
Sure.
I don't want him to have the experience of being explained to why Saheeli Rai and Felidar Guardian makes infinite tokens and he loses the game on turn 4, you know?
Yeah, not great for a new player.
So the things that they came up with are Aether Revolt Leagues, which are 3-card boosters. You build a 30-card deck and you play off. And I think that they've done this in the past with Kaladesh Leagues, so they're going to continue that on. And then Standard Showdowns are going to continue doing those, which is where players do, like, a standard, like, kind of league sort of thing over the course of 4 weeks. And they have, like, sort of unique prize packs that they give out for those. And they're doing something brand new, and this is going to start on April 15th. This is called the Magic Open House. And it says, this is straight from the article here, an event-filled day where players can stop by their LGS for fun, casual play that includes learn-to-play Magic events, free 2017 welcome decks for new players, and premium foil full art lands for interacting on digital, meaning MTGO, of course. If there's someone you've been looking to teach Magic, we hope you bring them to a store near you on April 15th. So
yeah,
they are really targeting the new players, which I think is a fantastic idea. They've really got to draw, put some attention to that.
So this is great, but it leads me to a question.
Yeah, what's that?
How do you bridge the gap? Because you have, you know, these very spiky players, or the very much not less casual but more educated players, and you have these newer players. So sure, the local gaming store can put on these events and do all this work and, you know, have judges, and that's great. But like, what can Wizards do to incentivize players like you and I? Uh-huh. Who, you know, we like to play a little more competitively, but we know that Magic is a game, and we have a lot of knowledge. You know, gaming store regulars, GP grinders, PTQ grinders, you know, that to not do this for, you know, whatever monetary incentive it would be, whether it be like special foils for older players or registering get approved or like, you know, whatever, but like, how can Wizards bridge that gap to show people, you know, after, you know, you can play for a while and get the level of this level of understanding, or these people are people that are in this community that can help you. Cause if Wizards could figure out how to unite those two groups, it would make it much more seamless to go from this Magic open house to going to FML.
Well, I assume that when you go to the open house, you find out about the standard showdowns and the Revolt Leagues. I certainly hope that they've thought about the timing of this thing. So when you go to that event,
you find out
about those standard showdowns and they're happening
in
the next week.
I agree, but it's not. I'm not talking about the event piece in specific. That's very zoomed in. I'm talking about the concept of community. Like how does, cause the local gaming store can only do so much. So like how does Wizards incentivize players that may be more entrenched in the local community to assist with these things? Cause those are the sorts of things where you bridge the gap between players who know a lot about the local area, about the game, and these new players who don't know anything.
Uh-huh.
And so it could be very intimidating for them to even really to step out and do something like this. If Wizards could figure out how to bridge that gap in a functional way for everyone, that's where I think these open house style events could be very powerful.
Yeah.
I don't have a solution, but it's just something I thought of while you were talking through it, is that how can we bridge that gap?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that that one major piece of that puzzle is having a really strong digital product in place that is user-friendly and easy to get into, which obviously is not the case right now, but I know that they're working on it. I mean, we talked about it last week, right?
Yeah.
So once that piece is in place, that's going to make it much easier for younger players to get involved in the game.
Agreed.
Because that's where they're at, you know? That's some
Agreed.
Place that they understand. That's a place that they're comfortable, and that's a place where they can play more often. And the only thing that's going to hold them back, and the thing that concerns me about it, is with all of the readily available opportunities for kids to like log on to Xbox and play Overwatch for free.
Yeah,
what's going to get them to invest in a Magic: The Gathering collection? Because honestly, the only reason that I would ever have done that in my entire life is because I was already hopelessly addicted to the game, you know?
Sure.
Even after 15, 16 years of playing Magic, it took me that long. I had to, you know, I had to be an adult before I said, you know, this is maybe the right time for me to buy into Magic: The Gathering Online. Because I was thinking to myself, man, that's awfully expensive for something that doesn't actually exist, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So that's a different conversation, I know, but I think that really is the key to this, because that's the future. You know, that's kind of where we're going here.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Before we go today, there's one more thing that came out, and this is pretty interesting. I just want to kind of mention it because, you know, on a total tangent here, there's something else that was announced today, and that is the history of Standard Gauntlet, which is pretty cool here. Have you seen this, Daryl?
I have not, but I read through it while we were working our way through the podcast, and this is freaking awesome.
Yeah, the throwback standard gauntlets, 20 years of standard. So starting on February 2nd after the downtime and running through March 1st, just like we've done the standard gauntlets for, you know, like the Pro Tour gauntlets and things, on MTGO we're going to have the history of standard. So we've got, like, some of the, like, the greatest decks in Magic's history running, like, from Pro Tour gauntlets. The first one is ranging from 1997 to 1998. So this is the Mirage and Tempest standard gauntlet.
Yeah.
So, like, we've got, like, Ball Lightning, Goblin Vandal, Jackal Pup decks, and, like, Rainbow of Freet, Counterspell, Dismiss, Dissipate, Forbid. Like, you're really going to have to look at these decks to figure out what the hell they do.
I mean, I know what all these decks do, and I'm so happy about the mono blue deck. How do you win? One Rainbow of Freet. 1-3-1. Figure out how to do it.
Yeah, is that right?
Man. There's four Stalking Stones, which are 6 mana 3/3s. So they're embarrassing.
Oh my god, that's brutal.
Yeah, dude, this deck, I don't suggest this to players that like standard formats like now. Because I'm just going to scroll through all these decks and tell you how miserable they're going to be. The mono red deck is just mono red. Sometimes you get mono redded, but they have four wastelands. So if you're playing non-basics, you get wrecked. The Drago deck, if you don't like counter spells, you're going to want to put a bullet in your head. The White Weenie deck has four Cataclysm. That can't be a card that Wizards ever wants anyone to have to play against ever again.
Yeah, there's a lot of Cataclysm going on here.
The Prospelume deck, do you like combo decks? Do you like to play against combo decks? Because if not, that sucks, because this is just straight up, like, play the fastest Cadaverous Bloom you can play, and then draw all the cards, discard them to make black and green, and then kill your opponent with one drain life. Like, it's atrociously awful. Recurring Nightmare, Survival of the Fittest, both so good, they're banned in Modern, or Legacy, and yet we're putting it together with such awful cards as Orcish Settlers, Uktavi Orangutan. We got one bomb, baby. We got a Verdant Force.
I'm honestly a little surprised that we started here in Tempest and Mirage.
Yeah, this is not the best. This is not the best. I mean, come on.
Like, if you end up randomly getting this mono blue deck with the one Rainbow of Freet, and this isn't your style, like, you could be pretty miserable after dropping
the most 10 miserable
tickets on this.
Yeah, Forbidian. That looks like a fun deck to play against. Nope. Not even close.
I mean, some people are, like, going to love this, of course.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to eat up. I'm going to play and hope I get the mono blue deck every time.
Yeah.
Like,
I love the number of Cloud Chaser Eagles that are in here.
Cool. Yeah, it's
well, that will be interesting. I look forward to the Larwyn one. Play some fairies.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So
I want the Shards of Alara block one where I get to play five color control.
Oh my god.
Esper Charm into Cryptic Command. Into Broodmate Dragon. Please.
Look at these mana bases. Reflecting Pool. They've got Painland, City of Brass, Gemstone.
Yeah,
Line.
Yeah, they've got real lands in this.
Volrath,
yeah.
Stronghold. Jeez.
Yeah. Dude, the lands are real in this format. Like, the lands are all really sweet. The Suicide Black deck just has City of Traitors for no reason, like.
just because.
Like you want to know what the most miserable thing in this whole thing is to me? Is that you're playing Oath of Druids with no Forbidden Orchards because they didn't exist.
Yeah, why does the Suicide Black deck plays City of Traitors literally for hatred? That's it, because everything else is a black mana symbol.
Seriously?
That's yeah, I mean, there's like insane. A one colorless symbol on like Urg Raiders and like a one colorless symbol on Dothi Horror, but like you wouldn't need two, you know?
It's absolutely insane. It's literally just to cast hatred and incinerate their life points.
But
oh
like
my
hatred's
God.
How you win, right? So.
Jeez, this deck is a freaking delight, man. Oh my god.
Yeah, these seem just miserable. Oh my god. Alright, cool. Well, these exist. There you go. You put a deck. Oh, this is your deck list for your vintage deck in the chat. I will put that in the show notes. But that is all we got for this week. We have hit 1 hour on the dot right now. There we go. 1 hour. Cool. We're consistent.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Cardnock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.